Okay, we're going to start here at the top of Ayin of Aleph, three lines down. Amar Rav Hanan, Amar Shmuel, Ma'ot Shei Yatomim Mutar Levotam Beribit. When it comes to monies of the Yatomim, permit them to be lent with interest. So Amar Le Rav Nachman, Mishum Diatmei, Ninhu, Sfinu Lehu Yisra. What do you mean? Just because they're Yatomim, we allow them or we feed them interest which is restricted? What about a Yatom permits them to violate the Yisra of Ribit that would not be permitted with anyone else? Someone says, "Yat made the achle the levdidhu lezo baratashok fakayu." Someone says that yitomim who eat money that doesn't belong to them, meaning that they take interest which they're not supposed to, lezo baratashok fakayu, they should go after the one who sent them. I mean, who's the one who created them? Their father who passed away. They should follow him into the grave. I mean, it's inappropriate for yitomim to be collecting interest. They are not patur from the mitzvot in any way, and why should it be permissible for them to collect interest? The amalei. So Nachman was upset about this explanation of Rav Hanan, and he believed that Shmuel couldn't have said such a thing. So he says to him, why don't you tell me what Shmuel said? He says, well, sure, Shmuel didn't say this explicitly, but you inferred it from a case. Why don't you describe to me the case over here? Shmuel was holding on to a cauldron or a copper water tank for the Yisomim, for the children of Mar Ukva, and Shmuel used to take care of it for them. So Tokyo v'Yahevle, Tokyo v'Shakyule. When he used to rent it out to the users, he used to weigh it before he gave it to them, and he used to weigh it when they brought it back in. So then he was charging them both for the rental fee, but in addition to the rental fee, he was also charging them the appreciation of the value, meaning the diminishment in the copper, because he was weighing it on the way in, on the way out, and whatever was missing, he was also charging them for it. So, shakle agra, shakle pachta. He was taking both the rental fee, and he was taking the pachta, the diminishment in value, the appreciation. If that's the case, then that's avat ribit. We just discussed on the previous amud that when it came to the ship, we said that either it's agra or pagra, but you can't have both. And even in the instance where we allowed you to take agra and pagra, we allowed you to take the rental plus the diminishment value, we only said that's if he took on a full loss. I mean, he took the loss of value of the boat disappeared entirely. But here, they're taking on any form of loss that happens. If they use it and somehow it wears down and then they weigh it and weighs less, then they're taking on that responsibility. That sounds like karv l'schar, but brachok mehafseid, and far away from losing. Why are they permitted to do this? He agra lo pachta. That's what Rav Hanan is saying. If they are renting it out, then they shouldn't be able to collect the depreciation in value, the diminishment in value. Be pachta, if he's weighing it, if he's charging them for the diminishment value, well, after that, he can't collect rent. It's one or the other. You can't have both. Otherwise, that's like avak ribit. Amalei, ki ha afilu b'dignani namishare. He says, what Shmuel was doing, we would even allow with, if they weren't, you told me. I mean, if they were regular lay people, we would allow such a thing in the Me'avad. Why? Right, that they are accepting the diminishment in value of the remaining copper. The kama de makle nachasha butzer demel. Because the more that the copper is fired or used, then the more it goes down in value. So what Rav Nachman was explaining about Dinah Shmuel is, in Ochanami, he was taking some of the depreciation of value, but there are a number of factors involved in diminishment in value. The copper cauldron that they were using diminished in value for a number of reasons. One, it diminished in value because the copper actually got worn down and it was thinned out. That copper, of course, when you weighed it before you started weighing it afterwards, that you could determine how much was lost, and he was charging for that. On the other hand, there was a separate diminishment in value, which is that the copper that remained, that not the copper that was lost, and that's what he was weighing and he was making them pay for, but there was a diminishment in the value of the copper that remained, because as the cauldron got used, especially if it was fired, the copper itself that was left was worth less. And because it was worth less, the Yatomim were accepting or had the responsibility for that depreciation in value. So here they were not collecting both the rental fee as well as the putting the responsibility of all the depreciation and diminishment in value on the renters. No, they were saying rental, yes. They were saying if it's missing something, physically missing something in the copper that's there, then you'll have to pay for that. On the other hand, the depreciation of the actual cauldron, you will not have to pay for that. That we accept the responsibility for. And therefore, it wasn't a problem of revit. And that's right. So Rav Hanan, you concluded the wrong, or you came to the wrong conclusion about what Shmuel said. You thought it was the reason that he was doing this because they were Yitomim, and it was permissible to lend out the money of the Yitomim for their benefit for revit. Nachman says that's not the case. You misunderstood the case. The case would be even true if they were not Yitomim. this is not a case where we have to worry about avak ribit because there's still depreciation which was being assumed by the owners of the cauldron, which are the Yotomim here. Notes over here in the top Tosfos, he says, Ma'ot Yotomim Mutala Votam Beribit. Meaning that, why, fine, if the Yotomim are permitted to collect interest on their loans, but we know that the Surim, when it comes to lending and borrowing with interest, the Isur is not solely on the creditor, but also on the borrower, on the Loveh who borrows. So over here, even if the Yotomim are permitted to lend out the money with interest, doesn't necessarily mean that the Loveh himself is permitted to pay the interest. So maybe it should be a Sur. Forget anything to do with the Yotomim, it should have to do with the Loveh himself. So Tosfos gives two answers. One answer is, Eino Hanami, but the Gemara had a different question or a better answer to this. Second answer Tosfos says is that, Inami Kasavar, that he holds over here, Lo Mechayev Loveh Mishum Lo Tashich, El Shekama Malveh Muzhar. That the Loveh will only be in violation of paying interest, and the Malveh himself is in violation of collecting interest. If the Malveh is not in violation of collecting interest, then the Loveh has no restriction in paying the interest, that they are right, a joint Isur. The Isur has to be include both parties. Only when both parties are Asur is it Asur. But if one of the parties is Mutar, then like the case of the Yotomim, it would not be restricted, and therefore they could have paid the repeat over here. Now the Gemara continues. Amar Rabba Bar Shila, Amar Rav Chista, Varmi Lama Rabba Bar Yosef Bar Chama Rav Sheshet. Ma'ot Shi Yotomim, Mutar Davotam Karov Vizchar Rachok Lehefzed. So true, we cannot lend out, or we cannot use the money of the Yotomim to collect interest on it. We can't lend it out with repeat, which would be a violation, right, of Nisur, but nevertheless, we can structure it in a way that they will be Karol Deschar. And what's that? These are the cases that we set up before, where the individual takes the money and invests it on their behalf. He takes 50% of the profit, and the Yotomim get the other 50% of the profit, but the Yotomim do not accept any downside. They do not take any of their chayut for the diminishment value. That means that the person who's taking the money to invest on their behalf will guarantee them back the money that they hand them, plus he will give them 50% of the upside. So now, that we know is Asur. We saw cases like that before. That's Asur mi derabanan because of Avak Ribit. So, because it's only an Isur derabanan, and it's not Ribit Mamash, so in this instance, the Rabbanan were Mekil. By Yotomim, they were not Gozer, and the Rabbanan allowed Yotomim to lend in such a manner. Tan Rabbanan, Karov Deschar, Verachok Lehefzed Rasha. Someone who is lends out their money in a manner which is almost guarantees profit with very low likelihood that they'll lose anything, he's a Rasha, because that's really Avak Ribit. Karov Lehefzed Verachok Deschar Chasid. Someone lends out his money, and he's more likely to lose than to gain, then he is a Chasid. Karov lezeh ulezeh rachok mizeh umizeh zu midat kol adam. People lend out with equal risks, and they take the, both the upside and the downside associated with it. This is the way people generally transact or interact with each other. That's the we call the midah benonit. So I'm only Rabbi Rav Yosef. These monies of the Yotomim, what should we do with them? When we get monies that we're supposed to, as executors of their estate, take care of as the Beis Din, what should we do with them? So stand by the Beis Din. We keep them by the Beis Din, and then we'll hand them to them slowly. We'll distribute the money to them slowly so that they can pay for their food and whatever they need, all their needs. And but we don't give them all the money in one shot. What type of help is that to the Yotomim? Because then the Karen, the principal, is going to go down. They're using up the principal, and eventually there won't be any money. What we really should be doing is investing the money on behalf of the Yotomim. And by investing the money on behalf of the Yotomim, then they could use the profits to live off of, and the Karen, the principal, would still be there. So he says back to him, okay, so what did you do? Samalei, but Kinan Gavadit lay to have a pricha. Try to find somebody who has, I'm going to call it raw gold or blocks of gold. Vinaktina to have a mine, and then we purchase that gold from him. We take the gold basically as collateral. We purchase the gold from him and give him the cash of the Yotomim. Vinan lahu nialei, karov the scribe rachok tefseid. And then when we distribute that money to him, we say, invest the money on behalf of the Yotomim for the upside. You'll share 50-50 in the upside, but the Yotomim have no responsibility on the downside, meaning that you'll have to return this exact amount to us. If you don't, we have the gold as collateral. Aval davar mesuyam lo, but if it's another object which has simanim in it, we don't take that from him, or we don't purchase that from him to protect the Yotomim. Dilma pikadon ninhu, because we're afraid that they were given to him by someone else as a pikadon. Vaati mari, and then the owner's going to come. Yav simanim, v'shakulei, he's going to give the simanim and take it away. So in that case, we give them something that is, first of all, gold. Gold, which would only be involved with people who are wealthy and therefore could afford to do this, number one. And number two is a devar that doesn't have a siman. Since it's a nondescript item, it's a block of gold. Therefore, in this instance, nobody's going to show up and take it away with simanim because there are no simanim. Tosfos qualifies this a little bit and says in the end that he thinks that the case here, that we're talking about a case that we're afraid that edim will come and come over and tell us that he left the item with this person and it has this siman here. That simply if the individual shows up and says, I have this simanim, we're not going to let them necessarily walk away with the item. Rather, it has to be that he has also has edim that he was mafkid, this item with the individual, along with the siman, that will allow him to take it out. For that fear, we say, we're not going to do that. We go to this person who has an item where we're going to be certain nobody's going to take it away from him. And because we're certain nobody's going to take it away from him and he's wealthy, we're going to invest with this individual with protection for the tumim that they have no downside. So that works well if you can find someone who has these gold blocks or these raw gold and someone's rich and can handle this. But what happens in a place where we can't find it? If that's the case, we can't find this unique type of individual, we're going to let the karam, let the principle of the yitomim wear down or be worn down. Ella, Amar Ravashi. Ravashi makes a different suggestion. Chazin and Gavra, the Mishaflu Nichske. We find a person, individual who is, he claims, he doesn't have any outside creditors that are making claims or questioning his ownership over his possessions. Umehemin, and he's believed, meaning that he is a trustworthy individual. Shama Dina Del Raisa, and he keeps, right, all the Dina Del Raisa. Velo Mekabel Shamta De Rabbanan, he's not willing to accept a Shamta from the Rabbanan, means that he also listens to Beis Din, and he will accept all the Dina De Rabbanan. Vino Neale Bebei Dina, and we give it to him in Beis Din, on the premise, we're going to give it to him with Karov Deskar, but Rachok Mefseid. We give it to him in a position where he will guarantee the downside to the Yitomim, yeah, there'll be no downside to Yitomim, but he will give them 50% of the upside. He'll keep 50%, and they'll keep 50%. And again, in all these instances, we are Mekil, even though these are Dine Drabanan, would be Avak Ribit generally. Here we are Mekil in these cases because we want to help out the Yitomim, and the Rabbanan, we're not Gozer in the face of Yitomim in order to protect them, in order to help them out, since they don't have anybody to work on their behalf. And by doing this, we can get people to work on their behalf where we don't expose the Yitomim to any downside. Hey, the next Gemara begins a Mishnah. Ein mekablin sonu barzel miYisrael, mipnei shehu ribit. One may not accept sonu barzel from Israel because it's ribit. Now, sonu barzel we had explained by Rashi before, that sonu barzel is in an instance where you take on all the risk. The person who is taking the item to invest or taking the item to bring up to split the profits also accepts upon themselves all the downside. So there we said, of course, that's problematic. But you can do this from a non-Jew because there's no restriction against paying interest to a non-Jew, whereas there is restriction against paying interest to a Jew. Now Rashi points out this mission is unnecessary because we already just had all these cases of Ein Mekablim that you're not allowed to take items for that whole Mishnah talked about a case where he only accepted half of the downside. Even a case where he only accepted half the downside, which says Asur, then certainly Mitzon and Barzel, where he accepts all the downside, it's going to be Asur. So Rashi says that's a Mishnah Yeterahi, that it's unnecessary the first part of the Mishnah. But the Mishnah comes to teach us about the Seifa, which is that you're allowed to take Tzon and Barzel from an Akum. Now, velavim mehen umalvin otam beribit, you're allowed to borrow money and to lend money to a nachri with ribit. V'chem begerv toshav. The gerv toshav here has the same din as a nachri, and therefore you are permitted to lend him money and borrow money from him with interest. Now, there's a cryptic statement in the Mishnah, which tomorrow's daf will deal with, which is melve yisro motav shel akum. A Jew can lend out the money of an akum midat akum with his permission, avol midat yisro, but not with the permission of Yisrael. That will be left to Gemara, and tomorrow's daf will deal with it. Now, the Memra, de Bishuta de Mekabel Kaimo. So the Gemara says, well, from this we can conclude that the item is in the Rishut of the Mekabel, the one who is doing the investing, who takes the item here then to split the Sechar, the profits later on. It must be that the item is in his possession, and that's why they're, of course, called Sona Barzel, is because he's responsible for the item, and he has to replace it if any loss happens over here. So that sounds like it's in his possession entirely. Where it says, Raminu, we have a question about that. Why? Hamakabel Tzona Barzel Minat Nachrim, Hevei Mishnah in Bechorot, it says that a person accepts Tzona Barzel from an Achri, Vladot Pturim Minat Bechora, that even the offspring are Patur from the Bechora. Now, what is the case? The case of Tone and Barzell, again, the same person takes an animal, he's bringing up the mother, and then they're going to split all the profits between them. So when they split the profits, as long as this individual keeps the animal, he can keep splitting the profits. Now, the profits include both the increased value of the mother, but also the offspring from this animal. Now, when it comes to the increased value of the mother, it's clear that there's going to be no bechora here, because if he accepts that from an achri, that means that he has, the achri has the majority ownership, he owns the principal in this animal, plus he owns 50% of the upside. The Gemara's questioning now is that when you have ladot, we have offspring from this animal, which they're going to split 50-50. So for instance, the animal has four offspring. Two of them are going to belong to the Yisrael, and two of them are going to belong to the Nachri. So now, in the Kis case, why is the Beis telling us, why is it the din in Bechor, then, that you're patur from Bechor, even on the two that the Yisrael takes? The two that the Yisrael takes are fully owned by him, they're his, and he can do whatever he wants with them. Why should there be any patur from bringing Bechor here if the Nachri doesn't have any ownership? That has to do with what the Nachri's position in the case is. In the case over here, the Nachri does not accept any responsibility for the losses. All the losses are borne by the Israel who's borrowing from the Nachri. And therefore, when it comes to our case over here, when it comes to a Nachri, then it's permitted because you're allowed to pay interest to an achri. On the other hand, when it comes to Israel, you're not permitted to pay interest to Israel, and therefore it will be restricted because here the investor is taking on all the responsibility of the downside, and he's only getting 50% of the upside, and he's giving the owner 50% of the upside. So in that case, it's a case where he did not mekabel onso bezula. It's a case where the owners accept no responsibility for the downside. Whereas the case in Bechorot, according to Abaye, is a case where the owners take on the onso bezula. They accept the achrayut of the downside. So now, if they accept the achrayut of the downside, now we understand why the nachri still has a possession or ownership in this animal, or even in the vladot that come out, because they are part of his ownership, his total package of ownership over here, that they're going to share in the upside and downside of everything. So if they're sharing the upside and downside of all the items that are here, then the Nachri still has ownership in every piece of whatever is done in this partnership. If that's the case, that's why he's patur from Bechor. So Abaye says there's no steer between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Bechorot, because they're actually talking about different cases. How could you call this Tzon Barzel? If the owners accept responsibility for the Ones and for the Zila and for the diminishment in value, how could you ever call that Tzon Barzel? We just saw, right on the previous daf, that Rashi defined for us what Tzon Barzel is. The definition of Tzon Barzel is that the investor, or the one who's accepting the property, is the one who takes all the responsibility of the losses, and that's why it's called Barzel. Barzel is steel because it's strong as steel, and the owners lose nothing here. So how could you call it a case of Tzon Barzel when the owners are actually taking responsibility for the losses? So Rav says that cannot be the explanation for the way to explain the stira between the Mishnah and Bechorot and our Mishnah over here. Vod, and if also according to you, Abaye, at the Tani Seif Avam Makablin Tzon Barzel Minakum, over here, if you want to say the differentiation in the Mishnah is you cannot do this transaction of Tzon Barzel with Israel, but you can do it with a Nachri. Let us say Lift Nog Midide, let it split even within Israel. That's in a case where the owners, right, accepted the first part of the Mishnah where it's Asur's, where the owners didn't accept, right, a responsibility for any of the loss. On the other hand, if the owners accept the responsibility for some of the downside, Shepardami, then it's not considered interest because then they are, in a sense, equal partners here, and it's Krov to have Seid and Krov to Schar for both partners in this partnership. Rava says, Idi de lo kabale mara unz vizula. The case here is in neither case, both in Bechorot and in here, neither case does the owner accept any responsibility. All the responsibility is on the investor or the active investing partner. Vegabi Bechorot hainu time with the vladot p'turim min Bechorah. Why are the Bechorot? Why is the mission in Bechorot say they're p'turim min Bechorah? If all the responsibility for the downside is on the investor, then the original owner really has no share in the vladot that they split, meaning that the offspring that are split, they are split evenly, 50-50, but the Nachri has no shaykhut to those animals. No, kiven de'iloy v'lizuze, the problem or the issue that comes up is if the individual doesn't pay him back the money, meaning that the money that he's owed, they assess the value of the animal when they first gave it to him, and he's owed, he has to guarantee that price. If he doesn't show up with that money, then what do they do? Ati Nachri tovas lal behema. His first stop in order to get his money back, because if you don't pay him, the money's going to go and grab the animal back, because that will compensate him for the karen, or for that downside that you didn't pay him. V'lo mishkach la behema, tafiz la lehu levadot. If he doesn't find the animal, he'll take the offspring. The fact that the nachri still has some relationship with this animal, why? Because both the animal and its offspring are guaranteeing the original loan from the nachri to this Jew. Because if he doesn't show up with the cash to pay him back the assessed value of the principal or the animal that he gave him up front, then it will be taken. He will take that payment for that compensation out of the animal itself or out of its offspring. That's the case. We know we know the principle is that anything that a nachri has any form of ownership or sheikhut, a relationship with the animal, that is patur mi b'chora. So the end, Rava says that the case is the same, both here and in b'chorot. But what's the difference, or why here do we say, right, it's not relevant, that the nachri is not relevant over here, or the owner has no relationship with the item? Because over here we're talking about the monetary relationship. In terms of the monetary relationship, the nachri has no real ownership, and the Jew, who is the owner, also has no real relationship. So therefore, it'll be permissible to a nachri, because you'll have to pay him interest, but it'll be impermissible to do it with a Jew, because then you'd be paying each ribit to the Jew, because that Jew, that owner, has no real monetary ownership in this partnership or downside in this partnership. On the other hand, when it comes to Bechora, we're not searching for monetary ownership or, you know, exposure to determine whether the Nachri has real ownership in the animal. All we want to know is, does he have any relationship with this animal? Does he have any ability to take this animal, even in a remote sense? And the answer is yes. He does have that ability. And when is that ability? That's in the ability when the Jew himself doesn't pay back the Karen, when he doesn't pay him back what he owes him, what he guaranteed him up front. Then the animal and its offspring become collateral and can be taken as payment for that original principal. Now, Tosos brings a case from Bechorot where we say, where if you have the ability to pay him off in cash, then the animal's not, that relationship with the non-Jew to the animal is not enough to be poter you from Bechorot. So why is it not in this case also? It's clear that he can pay him off in cash. If he can pay him off in cash, why is it in our case that we say that the Nachri's relationship to the animal is enough to be poter him from Bechorot? So it says, well, it's different. Because in the case of, for instance, Bechor that we're talking about, there was talking about an animal that seized for Anona, seized for the taxing or taxation authorities use the animal to collateralize your payment of the taxation. So over there, the animal is really owned by the Jew. The tax authorities will come and seize the animal if you don't pay them cash. So therefore, according to one Lishna in the Gemara over there, Rav believes that if you pay the cash, you could remove the tax authorities lien on this property by paying cash, then it's your animal, and therefore it's not patur mi b'chora. In our case over here, the animal is really owned by the nachri up front. Meaning that and he's the real owner of this animal, and truthfully, he's the real owner of the vladot. He's paying you, compensating you for your work in chatzis schar. So the real owner really is the nachri. We're removing it, you're removing it from his ownership because of the relationship here. So therefore, when you start from a position where the nachri really owns the animal, and you're giving it to the Jew as compensation, then when he pulls it back, where he has a right to claim it back for himself, then we can still consider it yad nachri b'emtza. The nachri has a relationship with this item. On the other hand, if it starts out in the possession of the Jew, and the authorities are coming to place a lien on this item in order to ensure that you pay the taxes, in that instance, it really does belong to the Jew, and he can remove the lien with cash, that will not be considered yad nachri b'emtza. Now, we explained the Gemara according to Rashi. The way Rashi explains the Gemara, that the issue with our Mishnah is avak ribit. It's an issue midrabanan. Now, Tosfos questions Rashi's explanation for one important reason, that we actually now are dealing with a issue in Bechorot, which is an issue midoraisa. It's a Torah issue about whether a Bechor is Shayach to a Nachri or Shayach to Israel. And when we're talking about our mission, we're talking about the cases of Avak Ribit. Avak Ribit is only restriction midrabanan. That means that the fact that we say that it's considered to be in the possession entirely of the investor over here, not the owner, but the investor, that's a din drabanan, and they classify that as Avak Ribit. But midoraisa, truthfully, the real owners, whether it's Yisroel or Nachri, still has a portion or some sort of ownership here. So what's the question of the Gemara at all? So Rabbeinu Tam, it's just a different reason here, and suggests that our mission is actually talking about a case of Ribit Ktutza, talking about Ribit Midoraisa Min HaTorah. And the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains is that Venira Kamosh Pesh Rabbeinu Tam the Matnitan Hachiari Beribit Doraita. Our mission is talking about interest that's charged from the Torah. Shepasak Damim Alatzon Vegam Pasak Damei Shavach. The case is here is where in the beginning of the contract or there relationship, he handed him the animal. When he handed the animal, number one, he guaranteed him to return the value, the principal of this animal. But he also guaranteed profits on this animal. So he then in the contract wrote, not only do I have to return you the principal, but I have to return you a certain percentage return no matter what. And he agrees to pay him each year a fixed amount as a return, no matter whether ben yeshem shavach ben lo yeh, whether there is going to be upside or not upside. This is real rebate. You're charging him a fixed amount of money every year as profit, and you're saying, you're guaranteeing me the principal, which is like halva. Number two is you're charging me a fixed amount each year, irrespective of how much profit is made. That is like rebate ksutza. And that is midoraisa. Then, based on that explanation, the Rabbeinu Tam says, now we understand the question from Bechorot. If we're talking about Ribit Doraita, and here in our Mishnah it suggests that when it comes to Yisrael, the Yisrael has no ownership in here, and that's why it's Asur, and with the Nachri it's Mutar, because we don't really worry about you paying Ribit to the Nachri. But if when your relationship with Yisrael, the original owner has no Shaychut here, and that's why there's Ribit, then why should that not be true by Bechor as well? So why is it then different by Bechor than by our Mishnah? And that's what the Gemara comes to answer in our instance over here. Okay, now, just to finish up the Gemara over here quotes a pasuk from Mishlei, which says, Marbe hono b'neshech v'tarbit, one who increases his wealth through charging interest and profits, ill-gotten profits, l'chonein dalim yikabzeno, that in the end, all that money will end up to the one who takes care of the poor. So those who charge interest, who do usury, who are doing what's inappropriate, then in the end, their monies will be transferred over those that do good, that help out the poor and take care of the poor. My l'chonein dalim, what does that mean that it'll end up in the hands of those that take care of the poor? Amarav k'gon shvor malka. It's like shvor malka. What was shvor malka? So Rashi explains, he was Melech Paras, he was a Persian king. No, tell Mamon Israel, he used to take money from the Jews. V'chonein behem dalim nachrim, and he used to take care of the non-Jewish poor. Shem dalim in a mitzvot. Right, so that they were poor in mitzvot. I mean, that poverty not necessarily meaning poor, but poverty meaning that they didn't have mitzvot. So he used to create a transference of wealth. So Mar sees here in this transference of wealth from Shavu Malko is because these people misused their money, and since they misused their money, therefore they were subject to this curse. Therefore they were subject to the saying from Mishlei, which is that the monies would be transferred away from them to Dalim. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Ali Huna. Rav Nachman says the name of Rav Huna, Lo Nitzricha Elo Dafilu Ribit Oved Kachavim. Wow, no, the Pasuk's not coming. What's the Pasuk coming to teach us? That one is not permitted to lend to a non-Jew with Ribit. Meaning that even a person who lends his money with Ribit, with interest to a non-Jew, that is impermissible, and that money will be transferred away from him originally. He will lose his money. So Eitvei Rova, the Rav Nachman, so Rova, question of Nachman. That's a Mishmorish Pasuk in the Torah. It says, the Nachri Tashich, in Dvarim, Chav Gimel, it says, it says, the Nachri Tashich, or the Nachri Kalot Tashich. It says that you should lend to a Nachri with interest, and you should not lend to your brother with interest. My Tashich, right, is when it says Tashich in the Pasuk, the Nachri Tashich, that you should charge interest to the guy, Lav Tashuch, doesn't it mean that you should, right, lend him money and charge him interest? So he says, no, lo, tashich. He says, no, that you should be lo. When it says, l'anachri tashich, is that you should pay interest to the guy. So what the Torah is saying is, l'anachri tashich, is that you are permitted to pay interest to a guy. Not that you should be taking interest from the guy. It says, lo sagi de lav hachi. Torah is writing a mitzvah that you should pay interest to a guy. What type of mitzvah is this? What do you mean, if we don't pay interest to a guy, you're violating an assay? I mean, what type of mitzvah is this? So Mar says, no, lafuke achicha delo. Not that there's a mitzvah, an obligation to pay interest to a goy, but comes to tell you that to your brother, you may not pay interest. Mar says, achicha behejiktiv be. That's the next line in the pasuk, that it says explicitly, lachicha lo tashich, that you're not allowed to pay interest to, the way you're explaining tashich, to mean paying interest. So it says explicitly, pay interest to a goy, don't pay interest to your brother. So what do I need the first part of the pasuk to teach me? There's a mitzvah to pay interest to a goy? That doesn't make sense. So we suggested now they meant, oh, don't pay, you can pay interest to a guy, but don't pay it to a Jew. We already have it in the Pasuk. So it says, oh, love, love, asay, lo tasay. Comes to teach you that there's both a asay and lo tasay, because we know a lav abal mechlal asay, a lav that's inferred, a negative command that is inferred from a positive statement, has a classification as an asay, as a positive statement. So over here, person who pays interest, or is lending with interest, is in violation of two. two Yisurim. One is, number one, that you are permitted to, or you should be paying interest to a goy, which means that you'd rather you shouldn't. That's the violation of the essay. And number two is, you have an explicit lav in the Torah, which says, do not pay interest to your brother. So that would be the second lav that you're violating. So Eitvei, the Gemara says, okay, so you explained away the Psukim. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah explicitly says, Levin mehenu malvino tam beribit, that you're allowed to borrow and lend to them with interest. So we have an explicit Mishnah that says that. How are you going to do that? V'chein b'ger toshav, same din by ger toshav. So Amar b'chir b'reit Ravuno lo nitzrecha el b'gdei chayav. Now, what is permissible, and what our Mishnah is discussing over here, is that one is permitted to lend out with interest in order to make a livelihood. If it's for his livelihood, that's fine. For excess profits, one is not permitted to do this. For livelihood, they're permitted to lend it to a guy. Beyond that, we say no. Ravina Amar, Hocha b'talmidei chachamim maskinan. Our Mishnah is discussing the case of a talmid chacham. Why time amai gazer banan? Why would the rabbanan gozer not to lend with interest to a goy, or not to interact with them in these manners? Shem yilmod b'masav, because maybe you'll become close with them, or these interactions will bring you close to him, and therefore you'll learn from his ways. B'kevin talmid chacham hu lo yilmod b'masav. Since this individual is a talmid chacham, he won't learn from the actions of the goy. So therefore, to the chacham it's permissible, because his relationship with the goy will be at arm's length, and since it's arm's length, it's a transaction that's permitted in a Torah, and we let that. The other places, the Rabbanan say, when it's not a Talmid Chacham, when someone that could be exposed to the culture or the ways of this non-Jew, and it won't be necessarily at arm's length, then we worry about the Jew's interaction with this goy, and we do not, me the Rabbanan, do not permit you to, or suggest you not to, lend with repeat to a goy, so you won't have these interactions. Now, Tosas discussed a very interesting issue over here. The question the Tosas asks, Uma, what about today? Today in Europe it was very common, meaning that the Jews were lending to the non-Jews with interest. It happened to be that that money changing or money lending was actually one of the big professions of the Jews, because the church had outlawed usury. And since they outlawed usury, then the non-Jews were not able to be in the business of lending money or to lend with interest. So therefore the Jews actually entered into the business, because that was an area that it was restricted to their non-Jewish brethren by the church, and therefore they were able to get into this business and lend, and that became their business. So over here, Tom, so the first one, Rabbi Tam says, "V'shum tishel sofrim haklach acharam mekel." So over here, first of all, Rabbi Tam says, we're talking about a din derabanan, and when it comes to din derabanan, we're posek lahakel to go this the kula route. V'kayim alant ki idach lishna. The Gemara in tomorrow's daf we're going to see actually explains Rav Nachman Rav Huna on a different case of Tani to Rav Yosef, not in our case here. If that's the case, then Rav Nachman Rav Huna has no application to our case here, and then the halacha would not be in that manner. So that's Ki Amad Yidach Lishna, the Mighty Had the Rav Huna, Brice the Rav Yosef. Below Asru Meolam, Rav Nachman Rav Huna, the Ribit the Nachri. If that's the case, then we don't have any restriction for Rav Nachman to give interest to a Nachri. V'afilu l'nishne kamo. Now, it says, okay, even according to Lishne kamo, yesh latir, you can still make a mutter, fish yesh lenu mas melech v'sarim. We have a heavy taxation burden on us. V'akog, k'davi k'day chayenu. And we're only able to survive. This is the only business that we can be in to survive. Vote, shanu shruim ben umot. We live amongst the nations. V'yav shalom leis takir b'shum devar. Imlo nisav nitan mehem. And other problem is that if we don't interact with them, we're not going to be able to make any money. We live amongst the non-Jews. We can't make all our profits from trafficking or business with our brethren. We have to interact with the non-Jews. And by interacting with the non-Jews, it's a demand on us. If we have to do it, then otherwise, what are we going to do? So I think it has both aspects. Meaning, k'dei chayehem, it was that was their livelihood, again, because we discussed the historical aspect, that this was their livelihood. And number two is the imposition of taxes on the Jews made it very difficult for them to live if they didn't make profits. They needed profits in order to pay the taxes and also have the ability to have their expenses paid. And lastly is that they have no choice. Meaning that when you have a choice not to lend with repeat, that's fine, because you have other options to make money. Over here, they had no other options of making money. So of course, we could allow them to lend. Tosos does also discuss a very, very interesting other topic, which he talks about. It's a medrash that is brought down in the Yushalmi about Tchiyat HaMetim. Over there, the medrash seems to indicate that there was one non-Jew that was not brought back to life because he had lent money with ribit. So it sounds from there that a goy himself was not permitted to lend ribit. So Tosos actually concludes, his first conclusion is, the Yesh Lomar, the Shema B'nei Noach, Hayu Muzarim Al Ribit, Kmo Shuzur Al Gezel, that non-Jews, the B'nei Noach, are restricted from actually collecting interest, that they are actually restricted in usury, like the church had set up, because that's one of the dinim of Bnei Noach, and it's a sniff or an extension of Gezel. Even though earlier in the Gemara we said that Ribit and Gezel were two independent labim, and you couldn't learn one from the other, nevertheless, it is considered to be a subcategory, a subset of Gezel, and therefore even Bnei Noach would be restricted in lending with Ribit. Now, that would only be true of lending Ribit one to another. I mean, non-Jew to non-Jew would be impermissible to lend Ribit, And Jew to Jew would be impermissible to lend with rebit. But the interaction would be then that a ben Noach would be permissible to lend to a Jew with rebit. Because if that was not the case, a Jew would also be restricted because of lifnei iver lo titen michshol. So that's what Tosafot says. Only goy to goy and Jew to Jew would be restricted, but goy to Jew would be permissible in terms of lending. And then Tosafot gives an alternative answer and says that Bnei Noach lo huzuru min b'nei rebit, that non-Jews are not restricted from lending with rebit. It's a huge chiddush to say that they would be restricted in lending with rebit. So the Tosafot says in the second answer, no, they're not restricted. And that medrash about Tchiyat HaMeitim, where they were brought back to life by Yechezkel, and it left out the individual who was lending with rebit, there, it wasn't the time for Tchiyat HaMeitim. It wasn't the time for Tchiyat HaMeitim. Anybody who was brought back to life by Yechezkel would got a bonus. So they got a bonus. So what they chose, only people who had acted in a manner that was above and beyond the letter of the law. This individual was permitted to take rebit, but we still don't look on that so favorably. And since he did collect rebit and we don't look on it so favorably, we say, all right, so it wasn't his time for Tchiyat HaMeitim, so they didn't bring him back to life. The others who didn't lend with rebit, they were brought back to life because they did Lifnei Mishurta Din. Since they did Lifnei Mishurta Din, they were zocheh to have that Tchiyat HaMeitim in the time of Yechezkel. But none of that teaches us any halacha about a goy and his relationship to other goyim and charging interest. Okay, we'll stop over here.